Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is finally Friday. Today is March 20th and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today. Something caught my eye yesterday. I saw a big announcement by the Director of Communications, Mr. Latre Ramming, that got me excited. It conjured up possibilities for Bahamians, particularly Bahamian bloggers. And I said, I need to reach out. I need to reach out just for him to explain what will be happening, to explain why I am so excited, the possibilities for Bahamians. Yesterday, the Director of Communication, Mr. Ramming, announced that Bahamian influencers could soon turn their social media success into real income as the Prime Minister, Philip Davis, prepares to host a conference at the Bahama next Sunday. Not this Sunday, but next Sunday is going to be a big announcement, a big conference that the Prime Minister is hosting. He said, Director of Communication continued that the Prime Minister is pushing to ensure local content creators can be paid for their posts. You know why it's posts a lot, right? And on their major platforms. And it is a benefit already enjoyed by influencers in countries like the United States. So I wanted to hear more about this, right? I don't want him to preempt the Prime Minister. I'm sure he won't preempt the Prime Minister. But I want people to understand what to anticipate. I want to understand who should be in attendance at this conference that's coming up next week, Sunday. And if it's a conference, if it's going to be a paid one, who is invited, what should we do with the time? Things like that I wanted to get some details on. So I reached out. Mr. Ramming has agreed to come on, at least via, he called in. He should be on the line now. And so this is what I'm going to press him for at the beginning of the show, just to get some more details. So if you're a content creator, if you're a blogger, this is the time now to listen in, to see if this particular announcement that is going to be conference that's going to be happening on next week, Sunday, if it is for you, and whether and how much money bloggers can make. Mr. Ramming, are you there?
Yes, thank you for having me. I think the Office of the Prime Minister would have said that the Prime Minister was interested in really focusing on creating a space for Bahamians to participate in the creative economy and building out that infrastructure. And I think that we take a strategic approach in doing so. But a huge part of that was there was a growing sample of our country, and I think throughout the region, who was participating in a space that they wasn't being monetized for. And sometimes, in order to move the goalposts along policy-wise, it really requires governments to work with the relevant partners to sensitize them to the needs of the market. And so rather than allowing the individuals to take on the issues as private citizens, I think what the government has undertaken is, closing the knowledge gap between the community and the platforms, and B, working with the relevant partners to reach the goal of removing the restrictions for persons to be monetized in the Bahamas. And so I think this would be, I believe, the first effort to reach that goal. I think this would be the first country in the region to take a serious look at doing so. But also, beyond just Bahamians being able to benefit as influencers and in that digital space, how the government could incentivize market for them to benefit as well. And like you say, you know, I don't want to preempt the environment, but I think the event next week at Bahama, we will make an announcement on how to participate in the event on Monday. Our first thinking was that it was going to be by invitation. Obviously, there's a lot of pent-up interest from the wide public, and we're going to adjust to that demand and request. And so on Monday, we'll have more clarity on participation and information. It's going to be next week, Sunday, 6 to 8 at Bahama. And I think that we will be able to share more of that with the public on Monday, how to participate, how to sign up to come to it. But I think that we are joining the excitement. A lot of times the knowledge barrier, the knowledge gap is one thing. And we've been working with the U.S. Embassy and with them from last year. And so we have expanded our partnerships and with a number of international agencies. And also the government is also going to the PMYS, what the government is also going to do to support the local community as well.
I see you mentioned partners, and I note that you mentioned the U.S. Embassy. So I'm assuming, and I'm not goading you on to preempt the Prime Minister, but I'm assuming that your partners will be present at the event next week, Sunday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., inclusive of the U.S. Embassy?
That's the intent. I mean, the intent is to ensure that the partners who we've been engaged with participate in the, and so obviously these are American companies. Some of them are American companies, some of them are foreign companies. And so building that coalition is extremely important to have this outcome. I think there's two things that could have happened here in the CNRA. You could have a government who would have just not taken interest in it. Or secondly, you have a government to say, you know what, you know, why don't we use the influence of the government of the Bahamas, just not to agitate an outcome in the Bahamas, but an outcome regionally. And I think that's what the Prime Minister has determined to take a leadership role. I know people try to tie this to the season that we are in, but really and truly, I could say that this has been something that I've been working on quite some time. We've been kicking it around the room for more than a year on how an event like this would look and who would participate in it and how we could achieve a credible outcome of that event. But I think that there's enough credibility of the Prime Minister's effort in making sure that the creative industry of the Bahamas is not only burdened, is incentivized for it. I mean, if you remember, let's look at the intellectual property legislation that the government passed, right? Now, whether or not persons taking advantage of it, we have put into the law legislation the protection of the work of Bahamian artisans and musicians. And really, you know, you're not supposed to be singing other than written consent and permission. I know that's probably the norm in the Bahamas, but now that is there is a prohibition of that by law. And so we've done a lot to protect the work of Bahamians. And I think this is another step we're taking to ensure that we create an environment for people to benefit off their talent. And also, too, I think a part of it is giving people the tools they need to strive in the industry, how to make better content to expand your reach, how to make better content to build your following to reach the thresholds for monetization. I think that's the type of conversation that we are interested in having, and I think we welcome all interested parties to that, to the table of that conversation.
And you said more information will be put out by Monday regarding the program.
That's correct. That's correct.
I noticed, or take note, or mentioned to you, or to remind you, that the Ministry of Tourism had a program, or was trying to promote a program, asking for content creators to, it's a competition, I think, to create content that is promoting the Bahamas. Is this announcement tied onto that, or this is separate and apart? And
no, I think this is what we frame as a holistic approach, right? We can't ask the international community to do something that the government isn't taking lead on domestically. And so that's why I refer to creating the domestic environment and participating. Now, what is an encouraging sign, CA, is that a lot of the Bahamian brands are now embracing Bahamian influencers and content creators.
Yes, I noticed that.
So if you look at Dunkin' Donuts, if you look at KFC, if you look at Wendy's, if you look at, Popeye's, they have already created the paradigm shift of bringing live their products and to drive their brands. And I think that, you know, we have to not only demonstrate that we're willing to expand this conversation internationally, but we are prepared to lead that conversation domestically as well.
So this is twofold. One for local content creators or local content, and then to expand it or give access to Bahamians to have an international connection to promote their work.
That's correct.
Okay. I want to, before you go, and I thank you, I wanted to ask one more question about politics, well, since you're here, right? But
okay.
I also wanted to know, to you, as a director of communication, how important is it to hear the Bahamian voice?
I think we value the biggest stakeholder we have in this democratic political process is the that of the Bahamian people, and I could tell you from my experience of over the past 4 years, the reward of engaging stakeholders is so much easier when you do it at the start than at the bottom. Yeah, a lot of things, a lot of controversies, a lot of mishap, a lot of misunderstandings could be avoided just by external communications. When I came in the office of Prime Minister, I hired someone whose job was head of external communications, and their primary job was to hold industry along the way as we introduced our new policy, introduced our legislation, so they are aware of what's happening. And a huge part of the confusion, most of the times, is a government that means well in the implementation of a policy or program, but have not gone to the stakeholders of industry first. And I think when you ask how important is the voice of Bahamians into the process, it's extremely important because a lot of the, let's take for example, the Retailers Association, right? Now, the Prime Minister made a policy announcement in January. By early March, they came back with concerns because they didn't quite understand after the mid-year budget how to zero-rated the exemption or zero-rated or would have worked and the impact it would have had on their monthly revenue, right? Now, it wasn't, they went to the press without full confidence that, you know, they believe that the government is looking for a way to maximize more revenue out of them, right? That was prior to having a conversation with the government. It wasn't until this week on Tuesday when the retailers and the Ministry of Finance and the Prime Minister sat down, there was greater appreciation from both sides of what it is the government is trying to do. So the Prime Minister started the meeting by saying, my primary objective, my policy objective, is to reduce the cost of food for Bahamians in the grocery store. How do we meet that goal in a way that doesn't impact anybody? And they were able to leave that room with a middle ground that helps all parties. So I think the conversation is absolutely important. A lot of confusions and misunderstandings could be avoided through having that conversation.
Okay. Well, let me ask this question. Yesterday, I saw you making the rounds explaining the government's policy regarding immigration, or at least responding to the leader of the opposition and what he tabled in the House of Assembly, accusing the passport office of doing fraud. Or that's my words. So I don't want to misquote him. But you went on explaining what is actually happening at the passport office. I want you to reiterate that point since you're here right now.
So let me add some context. So, you know, I know people are sort of, I would say, exhausted by the pointing of fingers between political parties, right? But I think it's always important in context, right? So if you indulge me for a moment, I used the example of a Cobra effect, right? So a Cobra effect in policy is when the government intends to introduce a policy to do a good thing, and it ends up making the policy situation worse, right? So example would be the Indian government wanted to reduce the population of king cobras in India. And they said that we'll pay citizens to bring the cobra snakes in. What ended up happening is once the persons realized that the more cobras they brought in, they'll get money from it, they just started growing more snakes, which exacerbated the population. So we call it a Cobra effect. So in essence, in 2019, the then FNM administration wanted to reduce the waiting time for the passport. They thought that when Bahamas was going for renewals, that the passport office was asking for the same information that you got on the issuance of a passport. So they reduced the documentation requirements. So only you needed to have was a valid passport, an NIB card, and two passport photos. The problem is the renewal of the passport, second security verification. So it gave the passport office a second opportunity to look for the possibility of potential fraud, right? And so when Nicholas Simonet became the chief passport officer in 2014, in 2024, the passport office had already had a culture where they were approving renewals just on the basis of a policy direction from 2019. So he was inspecting documents that he had queried, but it said it approved based on a cabinet conclusion from 2019. So he investigated what this cabinet conclusion policy was, and he stopped it because he realized that it didn't make any sense to reduce the verification requirements or the security requirements at the renewal stage. Once they removed the policy, when people started to come for renewal, they were starting to flag fraudulent documents that are originated outside of the Bahamas. So persons may have had a fraudulent document saying that the birth certificate would have had the wrong father. And when they did their background checks, they realized that the supporting documents was fraud. And so the reintroduction of the policy allowed them to catch the more fraudulent cases. So the argument we are making is that the FNM is saying that the government has created a problem when the government is correcting a policy decision that was instituted by the FNM, right? And what the leader of the opposition sought to do in Parliament, he brought to Parliament access, being investigated by the currently investigated by Lisa by the police, right? He said that there were 300 cases, which isn't factual. Then he went to 250 cases, which was factual, and the actual number of cases I believe was over, I think if I sound correct, either 91 or 98. 20 of that has been placed, 20 of it have already received persons before the court. Persons have been charged. Persons at the passport office have been arrested for participation in fraud. And so I think it's a general reminder that there's a reason why we have more security verifications. So when you see the passport office, to the credit of Nicholas Simonet, being able to identify fraud, because fraud will always exist. I mean, I mean, fraud exists in large democracies. It exists in small countries. To their credit, they are catching the fraud, dealing with it, and sending people to jail and be performed a plea for it. And, you know, just on another point, the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Thomas, should have a multi-agency approach in solving the problem. The reason why we're able to solve the problem now is because we have a multi-agency approach. Because the passport office and the Register General office and the Parliamentary Commission on Immigration now cross-collaborated information, they're able to say, you know what, these documents is in the line, this is not factual, and once the passport office flag an issue, they immediately tell the Parliamentary Registration Department, which removed that individual from the parliamentary registration list. So this ain't no crisis. This ain't no cover-up. Yes, it's a concern. That's why the government is dealing with it. But it's important to note that this problem as a result of a policy decision by the previous administration to reduce the wait time for passports by removing verification requirements, which resulted in the environment for fraud to happen.
I want to appreciate you and thank you for making time out for me and also adding that commentary lastly. I know it's trending now and a number of people were concerned. Bahamians are anxious about immigration and the idea of getting the right information out or explanation, we appreciate it. And I just wanted you to, again, inform us with up-to-date information regarding the passport office, the accusation of fraud, and an explanation on what is actually happening. So,
thank you so much, Sam. I'm serious. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That's Mr. Latre Ramming, Director of Communication at the Office of the Prime Minister. I see we have a call here. Let me engage the caller before we go to commercial break and continue our show. Go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM.
Good day. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You're live.
Wow, that's powerful. That's powerful. What I mean by is the explanation from the communication officer. It brings to light a lot of things that sometimes, you know, in politics, you know, it's amazing. I think the quick response from Mr. Henfield, because I guess he was in charge of the that department during that time, that all falls under his portfolio, failed to acknowledge the fact that the problem that maybe we're having, and if we really think about it, in renewal of a passport, sometimes this is the time, and probably last year, this year, this is the time that a lot of those ones that slip through the system would probably start showing its head. And there's a proliferation of this thing going on, but I thought what the communication officer just said just now was really powerful and leaves a lot to be thought about, because if you offered a system or you created a system where multiple loopholes, persons control through multiple loopholes, and the system is now finding out that those persons may have gotten these documents bogusly, it then now says, what is your argument? I'm talking about either any party who's opposing this, what is your argument now? Because obviously the system is catching them. And if you go back and you look back, the calculations of when these things started to show up speaks to a policy, obviously, that corrupted the process. So who's going to take responsibility? The people who's discovering it now, or the persons who would have implemented a system whereby these things were, you know, dropped through the cracks? Thank you.
No, I truly appreciate your commentary on it. I know a number of Bahamians have eggs about the seemingly increase of migrants, right? To the point they are creating conspiracy theories and stories to satisfy their not having any information on it. So I was very impressed that the government took the opportunity to go into detail to explain what has exactly happened before this horse bolted and ran away with it. Because I was saying, man, this narrative is escaping the government, right? And I was impressed to see that the director of communication came out and went in detail. The minister of national security went in detail. And mind you, there are still a number of concerns by behemoths. I'm not saying that all of the answers or all the questions were answered, but the answer that was given gives light or sheds light to what is actually happening, where behemoths can actually use that information and have a more responsible response, more informed response. I was going to take a commercial break, but I see all kind of lines are lit up. I'm going to engage these callers, and then I'll take a commercial break as we transition to some another topic. But go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM, you're live.
Yes, good morning, Yuri. Good morning, Yuri. This is Cialan Johnson. Please, don't rush me on this, because a lot has been said. The acting Prime Minister, Latre Rami. First of all, right, his speech is only for those that don't understand systems thing. Because when he spoke about what the passport office, right, and one of the emphasis he put on was on the renewals. If you now must verify these passports and information, whatever, the question is, how did they get the passport in the first place? And these passports was not all determined. If you listen to the Ambassador Simonet, the Chief Passport Officer, his emphasis on a show where he is a pet, and also in one where I was right before him, said for years, not his 1 year of having the job. And so, you know, the fact is that you're saying that you looked, not the systems in place, you looked at what is happening. That's a failure of programming and systems in place. It seems as if, though, we are manually doing things that technology allows. I've been advocating now, before we even got the new passport, that we purge the system in virtue of letting people know that we will move to a new system. First, you must build a system of integrity that comes from the birth certificate office, tied into the hospital, tied into national insurance, tied into the driver's license. These are called relational databases, etc. And the stack that has to be built is the whole concept that does not allow variances to care what you are. If it finds a dot or a T or even a slight misspelling, it then flags this process. And so we talk about, like as if 400,000 of us have passport. We don't. But you can put systems in to which to purge the system, but you cannot start as a concept of computer programming. Anybody who did it years ago knows G-I-G-O. Garbage in, garbage out. We have a broken system of identification in this country. And we are simply saying we will use broken pieces to create a solid functioning system. It can't happen. I don't care how to talk our way through it. We have a broken system that must be rebuilt from a digital perspective from day zero. Because the explanation giving concerning what is happening with the passport may appease those that don't understand processes. But I'm sure for those, not the only one, knows that it's garbage, what is being said. It is pure garbage. Because even if the fact is that we have one of the most secure passport, almost impossible. And you could ask Mr. Mitchell, almost impossible to do forgery of it. These people would have to go spend millions of dollars on machinery to basically duplicate our passports. Okay? I'm not talking about people who cut and paste a picture or something. I'm talking about duplication of the passport. The problem is not the passport. The problem is the systems behind the passport.
I appreciate you.
But I'm going to go to another point, right? The point is this creative thing. Garbage juice. Please, Nuri, please.
Go ahead.
This is not new to me, you know. This is something I've been advocating from 2007 to allow creatives to be accessed to this global platform. And asking individuals who produce information but has no understanding of the structure for which they are actually going to go. How many creatives knows the banking structure, the platform payment rails, the FX leakages, the banking recognition of non-traditional income, and all of these different things? This is not where you ask creatives how you think you should get paid. These systems have already been built around the world. You think other countries that is not part of these payment rails and other different things are sitting around saying, let's reinvent the wheel, let's ask the creative? These companies, these are not mom-and-pop companies. These are TikTok, Meta, which uses Threads, Instagram, and Facebook, Snapchat, Fiverr. It even goes beyond social media. And in November, a discussion was having concerning data privacy, data protection, and data sovereignty. That was rejected by this government. That's directly related to this, to what we're doing now. And you saw a letter I wrote in the newspaper concerning even what we're doing with the DARE bill. It's like we are trying to build a digital global, no, not build, we're trying to plug into a digital global economy with people with analog mindsets who is actually thinking that painting over old buildings makes it new. This is not. We have to build systems from the ground up that already is ready to be plugged into billion and trillion dollar systems that's already been built. We don't have to reinvent anything. And this concept of all you can meet would solve the problem. If he has a minister of technology, a minister of finance, and these other things, and they don't know what it requires, they can't do the research. It's a publicity stunt for the orange economy. It's a trillion. The orange and creative economy is a trillion dollar economy that actually tourism and other things plug into. This is greater than them. Tourism is a subsect in it. And you're saying that you don't know what you are managing and building, that you're going to have some publicity in place. I challenge the Progressive Liberal Party to let's have a conversation in public if you think I'm wrong. And if you want to fix it, then let's have a conversation in private. Okay. What they bring it to us is garbage juice.
I appreciate you, Seattle. We'll know come Sunday, next week Sunday, when the conference is being held, and we'll see who all being invited and see how behemoths benefit. But the lines are still full. I'm trying to get them so we can transition. But go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM, you live? Call you there. Let's go to the next one. Guardian Radio AM, you live? Okay, then we go straight to commercial break. When we come back, I have a voice note, at least a report. At least hopefully one of them be able to play on Kermit's board. We'll see how it is if I have to use my phone to play it. I want some commentary on it. Hopefully on come Monday, we'll continue with this conversation. We're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, but just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We're talking about everything, you know. This serious boy, this real serious boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave his boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying this, man. Just tell people I'm trying to collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Get set.
Track and field fans, it's that time. Time for the B3A Corrupta Trials, March 20th through 22nd at the original Thomas A. Robinson Stadium. Come see the country's finest young athletes in blazing battles on the track and fierce field competition as they look to book their tickets to the 53rd Corrupta Games in St. George's Grenada on the Easter holiday weekend. Who will make the team to represent the Bahamas? Be there for the B3A Corrupta Trials, March 20th through 22nd at the original Thomas A. Robinson Stadium. Competition starts at 5 p.m. on Friday, March 20th, and 3 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, March 21st and 22nd. General admission, $12. Children under 12, $8. $20 VIP. Three-day passes are $34 general admission, $20 children under 12, and $58 for a three-day VIP pass. The B3A Corrupta Trials, March 20th through 22nd. Don't you miss it.
Hey, everyone. Get ready for a night you won't forget. It's Z-Live's Far Back Friday Party with host Shivago Lang. Friday, March 27th, beginning at 7 p.m. Join us at Zapadillo State for a night of 80s and 90s music, dance, light bites, and refreshing drinks. Get your tickets at the Nassau Guardian between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. $50 per person. Cash sales only. It's Z-Live's Far Back Friday Party. Real music, lots of fun, eats and drinks, and oh-so-cool vibes. See you there.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. I have two clips I want to share. I'm going to try share them quickly. They're kind of longish. But the first one I'm going to let play for 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes, just to get the gist of the conversation so I can start the conversation. And the next one I might play for maybe 7 minutes so you get the gist of the conversation. So I let Kermit start that playing that so we can all understand what's happening.
How we get to work, how we get to where we have to go. And if we're spending more and more time on the roads, then it means that you're taken away from the diligent and effective and efficient use of your time. And that is why the overpasses will restart as soon as possible. I expect construction to start in this year of our Lord, and I expect within 18 months that Barbados will have the overpasses that it should have had 20 years ago. Mr. Speaker, I say the same thing with respect to the widening of Highway 2A, but we also know that we're going to have to address the issues from Graham Hall right back up to Newton as well, and whether that solution is widening or whether that solution is another overpass, especially there by the Coleman Junction. The member for St. Michael's House said it. When you have a right turn, you're in trouble in this country, you know. You're in real trouble anytime you've got a right turn in this country to make. How we get to work, how we get to where we have to go. And if we're spending more and more time on the roads.
And that was Prime Minister Mia Motley, Prime Minister of Barbados. She's talking about starting the construction of an overpass to help with their congestion. They're suffering from traffic congestion before suggesting that the Bahamas invest in an overpass. And since Mia Motley has also joined that demand or inquiry to have their country invest in overpass, I said, let me play it. Let the listening audience know that it's not only us who is asking for overpass or asking for a solution. Mind you, me. When I was at the College of the Bahamas, that's just decades ago, I had to write an essay on overpass, right? That was one of the debates that we had to do. And I wrote in the negative on the detriments of overpass. I still remember the detriment of overpass. So I don't believe that this will work. In fact, I think it'd be a detriment to Barbados since they're doing it. They're going to start construction. I believe because she doesn't have an opposition there, the alternative solutions is not coming through. I think this is one of those points or times that is happening. I think the overpass causes a deterioration of societies below the overpass. And if you go to any country where there is overpass transportation, highways and stuff like that, every community that is below the overpass tends to be become derelict, right? People start living under bridges. We've seen the same thing happening under our bridge. You go under Portis Key, there's an entire community that is challenged, right? I think it takes away from the ambience of the country in general, especially if you have historical buildings, if you have greenery, sea. Part of our ambience or the charm of the Bahamas is that you can drive by and see the ocean, right? And when you consider putting these overpasses, you're jeopardizing all of that, right? And then we have a history of not maintaining things. Just imagine how these overpasses would look in 10, 20 years, and then we living underneath these big bridges. And you see that everything underneath it has become decay, right? So I don't think this is a good decision by Barbados. I know we have, a number of Bahamians who are pushing for the issue because they're desperate in terms of the traffic congestion we do have. But we need to consider an alternative, wider roads, or have a particular lane that's for just buses. This left lane, only bus goes back and forth. We can do that. And that would speed up traffic because traffic would be on the right-hand side, and all the left-hand side with the lane for the buses would be going smoothly. See, easily solved. Traffic easily solved. And then more people will move from having their private cars to the buses instead, because we solved that congestion problem. Look how I solved that. I need to run for politics. I wonder if they could not. Anyway, I have another clip I want to play also. This is going to be a longer clip. It's a clip by the Prime Minister of the Bahamas about the economy. It's about the oil crisis. I guess not oil crisis. The possibility of oil crisis due to the war that is happening between United States, Israel, and Iran. This is the Prime Minister's solution is a bad word. His response as what the Bahamas plans to do if this war is prolonged in any particular type of way. So play that clip so listen on and you can hear what is the Bahamas' plan.
I know that many Bahamians have been watching the news from the Middle East and wondering what this moment means for the cost of living here at home. The conflict has disrupted one of the world's most important energy transit points, through which roughly a large global oil and liquefied natural gas shipments normally pass. As a result, international oil prices have surged from around $70 per barrel earlier this year to well over $100 a barrel, one of the sharpest energy price shocks the world has seen since the Ukraine crisis. This increase and the uncertainties about what will come next are putting pressure on oil prices, shipping, and supply chains. For a small island country like ours, that matters. When fuel prices rise in a global market, that has an impact on electricity costs, freight costs, transport costs, and in time, prices at the grocery store. People want to know what this means for their light bill, what it means at the pump, and what it means for food prices. We have been closely monitoring developments, engaging with our energy partners, and planning for various scenarios. I'm grateful to be able to say that policy changes we began to make early in our term have built more resilience into our system. In particular, the major energy reforms we have put in place, which include major efficiencies and improvements and risk mitigation strategies, have left us in a better shape. That work is still ongoing, but it means we are able to see that your electricity bills, which are lower already from the changes, will not be impacted by the current crisis. This afternoon, I'll meet with that meeting is focused on one thing, how we work together ahead of the April 1st VAT reduction on food to bring costs down for Bahamian families. I want to hear their concerns directly, hear what they are seeing in the market, and hear what practical steps can help
ensure that relief reaches the people who need it. Because that is the focus. Bringing costs down for Bahamian families is the focus. Giving people relief at the grocery store is the focus. And nothing will get in the way of that. My government will stay close to this issue. We will work with retailers. We will listen carefully. And we will keep pushing for results that people can feel in their everyday lives. The second matter is security. Periods of instability can create pressure for far beyond the original conflict zone. That includes illegal migration, maritime smuggling, and other unlawful activity across this region. So we are watching that situation very carefully in Haiti and Cuba. The Royal Bahamas Defense Force remains on alert, from Great Bahama Bank to Keysile Bank and to Anguilla Key. We are actively monitoring our maritime space. Our assets remain in the southern Bahamas, and we are working closely with the United States Coast Guard and other partners. That presence is active, and it is producing results. Over the past few days, RBDF personnel intercepted 57 migrants in the Little Inagua area. 29 were apprehended on Monday, and a further 28 were apprehended on Tuesday morning. They were transported safely to Great Inagua, and investigations are continuing. That operation is a reminder that border security is daily work. Coordination, readiness, and strong partnerships. That is why we came to office. When we came to office, we invested in strengthening the capacity of the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. We understood that in an uncertain world, a country like ours must have the ability to monitor, respond, and protect its territorial integrity.
Yes, I wanted to make sure you had a clip. I might continue that because it's only, it's like 7-8 minutes long. It's worthy to listen to. It's the government's plan, the government's response. Note that he mentioned migrants, a possibly increase of migrants, and they have a plan. They plan to use the international partners and of course, the Defense Force officers. He mentioned that he's going to meet with the Retail Association to create a plan in terms of response if there's an increase or there's a shortage in supplies here. I assume that with COVID, actually, the price of, what was it? The price of eggs, and during COVID, we had to find alternative venues, and as mostly South America and the Caribbean to import goods. So we have a practice or experience of doing that. So I'm assuming that the government will embrace that opportunity again to get cheaper prices. I see in the United States the cost of gas has already increased. So I'm assuming that the cost of gas will increase here. I take note that the government said, or the Prime Minister said, that the electricity bill will not be impacted by any increase. I'm not sure what that means, but that is commitment that the Prime Minister has made to the Bahamian people. He said that we'll continue with the benefits we have had through their alternative processes of how they decrease. But we have a caller here. We're going to give them some time as we near the end of the show. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM, you live?
Yes, good day. You know, most of the things about energy, production of energy, or protecting the rise and then cost and energy, that's gaslighting. Only one thing could be done. You know, that's an cost of living anywhere, anytime in the Bahamas is the reduction in duties. Hello?
Yep, listening. Go ahead.
Right. And everybody else is doing that. That's all they are doing everywhere, reduction in duties. We don't have any, what you call it, reserves, right? So, but what the Prime Minister dealing with, he think we got to be Sea Island, somebody like Sea Island to understand or to have, you know what I mean, to have to comprehend what's going on. What's going on, man?
I see the opposition made a recommendation to the government to not to discontinue tax or take off duty, but create a cap. So if the price increases to a certain level,
the government got to subsidize it for its true reduction of duty and they got to put money in this thing, you know what I mean? They got to pay people to, you know, they got to purchase, you know, reduction in duties, every many places. That's foolishness. What are you talking about?
And I hear you.
You know, he's talking about what he done, what they done with and their energy reform and things. Come on, man.
Do you believe that the government can afford a reduction in duties?
That's the problem in this Bahamas. That's the problem in this Bahamas. We don't have any economy. We have it tourism. And we keep, you know what I mean? Look what's happening with tourism in the Middle East. It has problems because it's dependent on this oligarchs and thing, and you know what I mean? Taking money, you got to have money, and that foolishness we'd be dealing with, man. Thank you.
I appreciate it. So the opposition made a recommendation to the government where they will have a cap, or they suggested that the government consider having a cap. So if prices does increase at a particular price, if it goes to that threshold, the opposition said that at that threshold, that whatever is the duty or the percentage of the duty or the percentage of the tax, that it won't be calculated beyond that point. And I can appreciate that. And there's several countries who are doing the same thing, who have created a cap and said we won't tax beyond this point. I see the caller mention that perhaps we need to take off duties altogether. And I ask him or challenge him, can we afford it? If you take off the duty, take off the tax, that will short the government's revenue. That means surely the hospital will have to get less money now, right? The schools would have to get less money now. Any projects that the government have in the pipeline would have to be suspended for a minute. So I'm not sure if that's beneficial for us, right? And mind you, I appreciate the cost of duty, cost of living, and trying to assist the Bahamian public. I'm hoping that this war doesn't last long. And I'm hoping that more Bahamians come forward with ideas on what the government can do and start voicing these ideas, because they tend to listen. Let's go to this caller. Guardian Radio AM, you're live.
Yes, Mr. How are you again?
Doing well.
Great. Somehow I get very offended when you have a particular caller that calls in and makes it seem as though that everyone else in the Bahamas are idiots, are not educated, are not advanced in thinking and processing, and I don't know about a lot of other folks, but I become, I don't even have to call a name. I think everybody knows who I'm speaking about. And I feel as though that the entertainment or the time given to a specific individual and not allotted to others appears to be lopsided. I only wanted to say that. You know, I had a university professor that once said, he that thinks he knows it all, check his real background, see how much he actually does implement what he knows, and see how effective it's happening in his environment and the environment around him. That's all I'd like to say, sir.
I appreciate you, caller. Thanks very much for calling. And I guess, well, and hopefully it resonates and help those or the person who you're suggesting needs to be checked. There are times that sometimes you may have to say less in order to impact more, right? And that's something we must consider. But this has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Next week, Monday, I'm hoping to hash out the Prime Minister's response to this possible economic downturn, this global downturn due to this war. I'm going to see whether his response is adequate. And I didn't have enough time to do that, so that's why I just played part of it. I wanted the listening audience to know that there is an official response. And we just need to now challenge, ask more questions about it, and then have the government supply more information for it. Anyway, Guardian Radio AM, enjoy your weekend and take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.